Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com and get up to 15% off your first purchase as a member with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for up to 15% off your first purchase as a member.
Hello. Welcome to an episode of Telling Everybody Everything, another episode. It's Thursday, April 25th, the day that Joe Wilkinson's Bargain Holidays comes out on Channel 4. This is the show that I've been banging on about for months. My good friend Joe Wilkinson, you will know him from Afterlife with Ricky Gervais. You will know him from countless episodes of Taskmaster, 8 out of 10 Cats, Cats Countdown, loads of comedy in the UK and elsewhere, and you will know his podcast Chattabix, if you feel like listening to a podcast every single day of your life. He records that every day somehow. He's a wonderful person and a very unique man, a bon vivant and a bargain hunter. Joe invited me, and for some reason I agreed to explore how to get different holiday bargains with him. I did this in good faith that he would not be taking the piss, but take the piss he did, and it became an episode of The Simple Life. You will know from America with Paris Hilton and Nicole Richie. It's just me and my fancy self cleaning a beach for 3 hours to get a free hot dog. I don't feel that that's a bargain, but you may disagree. We did find some excellent deals and really good ways to be frugal as a family on holiday, as a couple on holiday, a lad's holiday. We did all kinds of different fun trips. So please tune into that right after Taskmaster on Channel 4 at 10 p.m. If you are unavailable or too tired to watch it at 10 p.m. on Channel 4, you can watch it on their, what's their like player called now? It was called 4OD the last I checked. All 4 now, I think it is. Why do they keep changing the name? I'm going to be the devil's advocate on today's episode of Telling Everybody Everything. I think it's important to say the quiet part loud. Last week, I had a little bit of a different view of the red carpet mayhem that ensued after Hannah Waddingham was asked by a photographer to show some leg. I received many messages from people being like, yes, Catherine, you have internalized misogyny. I'm going to have to disagree with you on this occasion. Rah, 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 rah. I'm not really sure why you all got so worked up, because I prefaced my hypotheses with the knowledge that I am probably wrong. But I think it's really important to articulate these thoughts anyway. Even when you're feminist, even when you're progressive, even when you know that the perfect answer is right in front of you, I think there's nuance, I think there's gray area, and I think it's okay to say, oh, you know what, why I feel this way, why do I feel this way, and explore it, and acknowledge that I may not be as progressive or as feminist as I thought I was, because I have these thoughts that creep in and these allowances for certain behavior. So if you want to listen to last week's episode or any episode, I think there are like 230 episodes for you to choose from. Be my fucking guest. And while you're at it, you can share clips of the podcast. You can share just like a screen grab of you listening to the podcast somewhere tropical. I always enjoy that. Tell your friends and family about the podcast, because I don't really do any promotion for it and I don't know how to find podcasts myself. I know the big ones, the chart toppers, but I need to have a podcast personally recommended to me. And then I dig into it, and then I really love it all the time, because my friends know me, my friends know what I like. You might not be my friends after I say what I'm going to say. I usually stay away from any discussion of violence, of war, of conflict, and that's because no good can come from me discussing it. I get loads of inbox messages from people who are like, no thoughts, really? No thoughts on Palestine? And it's like, do you need to hear my thoughts on horrific violence enacted upon innocent people, period. And it's crazy that we argue, because I think that all of us are against this. But governments are crazy, and they always have been. And it's so frustrating that we have very little power to stop anything. And I feel emboldened by people who think they have power to stop it. I hear them all the time, advocating on social media, having demonstrations in real life. I mean, I really hope that that can make a change, but there's a hypocrisy on it that really jumped out to me. And I've always known this, obviously, but there was a woman in America, someone I really admire and respect, and she makes herself very clear, her viewpoints on all of these things. And she sounds off, and she is extraordinarily pro-Palestine. She sees no nuance in the situation. She said it's an occupation, blah, blah, blah. People are being forced out of their homes. Like, this is how I feel. No gray area. You know, support Palestine. Great. Fine. But she's living in America. And am I crazy, or is that not an occupation? Because in Canada, we know now, we found all these tragically deceased children buried under schools, and they were deceased not that long ago. We know how Canada and America were colonized. I don't understand how anyone who's living in a colonized country doesn't see the hypocrisy in that. Like, I agree. I'm not even trying to introduce whataboutism to the argument. I'm saying, yes, if you're going to be vocal and you're going to be supportive and you're going to denounce war, you have to at least recognize, oh, but this violence has always existed. My country was founded off the backs of slavery, violence, horrible things. How can you stay there and still have that argument? And I'm not suggesting that you leave, because where are you going to go? Where is anyone going to go? And this is, I think, what people mean when they say it's so complicated. It shouldn't be so complicated. I think ban war, ban violence, ban innocent casualties, period. But women aren't in charge of things like that. I feel like if we were, apart from just a very few psychos, none of us would allow I don't even want to say it, because how do you look at some of these images and not crawl into a closet and rock back and forth in a ball? This is why I don't usually touch it, because I get whiplash from people that I follow on social media who are like, oh my gosh, I got these new sunglasses. Aren't they amazing? Do you like my new jeans? Yep, just going swimming today with my gal pals, little mini break, having a cocktail, and then really violent images with children, and then back to getting a pedicure today, having a foot massage. It's like, what? Where do you resolve the complete dissonance of that, the complete detachment from reality? I choose usually not to touch on it. I am meant to be an escape for people. I am meant to be a happy place for people. And I've chosen now not to discuss politics, but I think it's just a question to people living in colonized places, especially Canada and America. If you're going to be so vocal about this is bad and it's an occupation, aren't you living in am I crazy? And if, like, have you at least recognized in your own mind the hypocrisy of that? I'm not saying it's okay, but neither is how we got there. You know what I'm saying? It's all bad. It's all very, very bad. Another area that I feel like people have been asking me to comment on today, and I feel badly because I'm someone who sides with comedians. These are my people. I think it's really important to be respectful of them and their craft and their decisions in their own shows. And I really like this comedian called Arj Barker. I honestly don't know a lot about him anymore. I don't have my finger on the pulse of what's going on culturally at all. I'm at home raising my kids, or I'm going to work myself. But I remember talk of Arj Barker when I started comedy in Canada. I've seen a few of his things kind of around that time. I think he's really funny. You know, I think he's actually Canadian. I'm not going to look it up because I'm a person who doesn't do any research for this podcast. It's a stream of consciousness. But he has been in the news this week because a breastfeeding mother was allegedly ejected from his show. And it wasn't because she was breastfeeding. She had what I've seen is a 7-month-old baby with her at the show. And the baby was talking or vocalizing during the show. And I think she was asked to step out with the baby or keep the baby quiet a few times. But ultimately, I think the venue or Arj Barker himself made the decision that it was distracting the other people, the 900 people who'd paid to come and see a show that was constantly being interrupted by this baby, and she was asked to leave. I also read that she had another older child who was home with the dad. So there was childcare for this 7-month-old to stay home with the dad. And presumably, if the baby had been breastfeeding and sleeping and not disrupting the show, the breastfeeding was not the issue. But ultimately, and correct me if I'm wrong, from everything that I understand, that's what happened. Mother, breastfeeding age baby, went to the comedy show with the mom. The baby was disruptive. Eventually, after some back and forth, the baby and the mom were asked to leave. And I think it raises an interesting point about inclusivity. It's a tough call in the moment because you have to make a fast decision. And again, I don't know whose exact decision it was. And it is annoying when your audience have paid to see something and it is being disrupted either by drunk people or a faulty sound system or perhaps noise from a nearby venue where there's music or indeed in this case a baby. And it's a 15 plus show and people are assuming that there won't be children at this show. But if we are leaning in the direction of inclusivity and we're making adjustments for people with all types of different needs to attend and enjoy the same entertainment as ABs, able-bodied people, or people without any additional needs, then why doesn't that include a breastfeeding mother? I know there are lots of people who will disagree with this. Already I've seen loads of people are on the side of, yeah, kick them out, don't bring a baby to a show. But as a breastfeeding mother myself, and as a comedian, I have made allowances for people with different needs in my show. There are people who come to the show with tics. They make noise, they shout out, they might have a variation of Tourette's. I welcome people come to my show, obviously, in wheelchairs or with walkers or with a physical impairment that means that we need to accommodate them with seats. That doesn't make any noise, but fair enough. I have welcomed people who need an interpreter on stage. Arguably, maybe that's distracting to people who can hear to have a lady on the stage doing British Sign Language. No one's complained about it thus far because you would be a complete asshole to do that. Everybody loves having the interpreter there. But arguably, those different things, especially the shouting out, especially the tics, could be seen as very distracting. But you would never kick out an autistic person or someone who had Tourette's for making noise and vocalizing because we live in a very progressive, inclusive society. And you go, yeah, they have a right to be here just like I do. And we adjust our expectations for everyone. A breastfeeding mother, I think, and the men don't even have to consider this. This is what I love about comedians. There are loads of dad comedians. They have not had to, even when they're the best dads, the ones at my level anyway have wives who look after everything and they can be really hands-on dads. They are not touring like I am. They are not traveling around. They are not breastfeeding and that's not their fault. Like biologically, they can't do that. But it does surprise me that a lot of these boy comedians can't even consider what it would be like to be in the position where your baby is being fed from your body. Well, can't you express a bottle of milk and leave the baby at home? No, not every baby will take a bottle of milk. Oh, well, can't you just stay home while the baby's breastfeeding and just schedule a show next year and stay home for 1 year? No, because if we're really looking to be equal and leaning into inclusivity, if the dad can go to the show or a child-free person or anyone else can go to the show, then why not include a breastfeeding mother? And unfortunately for the people around her, including her means that she's going to have to bring a breastfeeding baby. Oh, well, can't she breastfeed and then sneak out the door really quickly and go to the show and then rush home? No, not necessarily. It doesn't always work like that. And plus, the distraction and the pain and the anxiety of being separated from your newborn baby would be very distracting to the mother. Oh, well, if the baby makes noise, can't she step out of the venue for a bit and come back in? I mean, in a perfect world, yeah. To be honest, a lot of us would have stepped out if the baby started making noise. I certainly would have. But should I have to? Should I have to? Is the man with loud tics in my show supposed to step out during those tics and then come back? No, he isn't. People make allowances for him. And I'm not saying that they shouldn't. I am in no way disagreeing with the inclusivity in venues now. I love it. But why do we still leave breastfeeding mothers out of it? is because secretly, still, everybody hates women. I saw Busy Phillips in an interview about her show. What's it called? Like Five Girls or something about fun girls. I'm so sorry. We don't do any research on this podcast. Something cool with girls. And I love Busy Phillips. And I think it's on one of the streaming services. Maybe Apple TV? Don't know. And she was promoting that. And the interviewer asked her about Ozempic. And she said, a lot of my friends in Hollywood are taking Ozempic for weight loss because you would be naive to say, or you would be a liar to say that you don't get more jobs, that you don't get treated better, that you don't have a better life if you look young and slim. And the subject of male action stars came up. And she said, they have been on human growth hormone for years. If you see a male actor over the age of 40 and he's playing like, I mean, I don't mean to single anyone out because I don't know who plays these guys, but like a Marvel baddie, he's on human growth hormone. She said, they've all been on it for years and years and years. That's how they look like that. They're not in the gym. Well, unless you're Mark Wahlberg, the rest of them, and maybe he's on it too. Who fucking knows? But men take things, supplements in Hollywood to look the way they look, and nobody talks about it. And women start taking Ozempic for what? 7 months? And everyone freaks out because deep down, we just don't have, you know, things are great for women. Things are wonderful. Don't get me wrong. But we're still not considered wholly in a conversation about inclusivity. The big news in the Ryan Kuster household, of course, is Taylor versus Kim, round 1001. Taylor Swift has officially entered her not-so-subtle era with the release of her latest deluxe album, The Tortured Poets Department. But it's unclear exactly who is the tortured party here, because one track in particular is raising eyebrows. Thank You, Amy, with the K and the I Am capitalized in Thank You, Amy. It's spelled like a crazy chav way. No offense, of course, to any Amy listening. So it rips fresh wounds into Taylor and Kim Kardashian's ongoing feud with lyrics like, all that time you were throwing punches, I was building something, and I can't forgive the way you made me feel. Screamed, fuck you, Amy, to the night sky as the blood was gushing. And it wasn't a fair fight or a clean kill each time that Amy stomped across my grave. And then she wrote headlines in the local paper, laughing at each baby step I take. Everyone knows that my mother is a saintly woman, but she used to say she wished that you were dead. And so I changed your name and any real defining clues. I mean, not very effectively, Taylor. And so one day your kid comes home singing a song that only us two is going to know is about you. Didn't Katy Perry and Taylor have a feud back in the day about stealing dancers? And then Swish Swish Bish is allegedly Katy Perry's reply. Like, are these girls in West Side Story? All these little pop songs back and forth feuding. Like, they think they're Public Enemy. Taylor had dancers that allegedly left to go on tour with Katy because it was more dancing, it was more challenging, it was something like that. I'm sure it was that way around. So, I don't know. Is this the beginning of a Kim Kardashian-Katy Perry bestie ship? Or have they buried the hatchet? Or is Taylor Swift not as innocent as she seems? Because she seems to be racking up a few enemies. And is this the language of someone who genuinely wants to heal and move on? At this stage, hasn't she made her point? This is done and dusted a while ago, but they're both very clever businesswomen. And so what's wrong with a little clickbait? I wouldn't be surprised, especially having read the lyrics, if Kim Kardashian was a ghostwriter on this song. If they were like, how can we squeeze a little bit more money out of how much people love a girl fight? In later Kim content, Kim appeared on American Late Night Chat Show, Jimmy Kimmel Live, on Monday, and although he curiously forgot to ask her about this diss track, he did get her to confirm two rumors about her habits. Number one, she blow-dries her jewelry before putting it on and has someone remove the cardboard sleeve from her Starbucks because she hates the sound of it rubbing against the cup. Why would you blow-dry jewelry before putting it on? I don't get that. Just so, like, it's warm? Because jewels are cold and maybe she just doesn't like the shock of cold diamonds on her skin. People are dying, Kim. All right, L'Envivre Céline. Céline Dion is back in a grand way, covering the latest issue of Vogue France and giving a wide-ranging interview on her life, her love, her career, and of course, a vital update on where she stands with her battle against the elusive stiff person syndrome. According to my hero, I have not beat the disease as it is still within me and always will be. I can't really do a Celine Dion impression. I mean, we've all just learned. But doesn't she talk like this with a French accent? A franglais, francophone? Not really. I don't know. Well, I feel like I'm always reading Celine Dion speaking, but I'm not hearing her speak a lot. Let's listen to some Celine Dion speaking.
You do exercise, or how do you work that? I mean, do you?
I still have a coach.
Really?
I do have a coach. And
what does a coach do with you?
It's really boring.
Why do you need that?
It's a stretch. If you go and see a dancer stretching on the floor, you might think she's very flexible. Wow, she can really stretch that leg. But it's not choreography. It's not artistically beautiful.
Okay, so like an Americanized still French accent. I'm not going to do it. So, according to Celine Dion, I haven't beat the disease. It's still within me and always will be. Dion told the publication, adding that for now, I have to learn to live with it. She said she does athletic, physical, and vocal therapy, little tidbit we just heard. She does that 5 times a week and she's living day to day. The way I see it, she said, I have 2 choices. Either I train like an athlete and work super hard, or I switch off and it's over. She said she has chosen to work with all my body and soul, from head to toe with a medical team. I want to be the best I can be. Today, I am a woman who feels strong and positive about the future. Same here, Celine. Same here. Elsewhere, a healthy and hearty Celine participated in one of Vogue's YouTube series, Life in Looks, revisiting some of her iconic outfits and fashions, spontaneously bursting into song like only she can several times. And among the nuggets dropped, oh yes, her iconic recording of My Heart Will Go On was done in 1 take under the pretense of being a demo against her will. Her wedding tiara gave her an infection that required a 3-week course of antibiotics, and she still stands behind the Galliano backwards suit that got her a load of negative press. I'm doing this big, very first ever eBay Live in the UK on May 1st, and you can join that. There'll be loads of instructions on how to do that in my socials. It's really exciting for me because I borrow a lot of things, and I'm a very big fan of pre-loved clothes and sustainability and circular fashion where girls borrow from other girls, and why have a closet full of brand new stuff, especially occasion wear when you can only really wear it once. And so I've gone through my wardrobe. I'm going to give a few things away. Well, I'm going to sell them on this eBay Live, but the proceeds are going to one of my favorite charities, WISC. It is Women's Health Information Services Center in Liverpool. I chose it because it's a real small grassroots charity, and those are the ones that I feel get the most direct work done. I love them loads. And so you will see some outfits, some of my more iconic outfits on that eBay Live. And I love it because what we're promoting is that eBay have no selling fees on pre-worn clothing, pre-loved clothing now. And so it's the perfect place to do a spring clear out. This is not an ad, though what I'm doing for eBay is an ad, but I'm telling you about it because it's tricky with me. I have a really organic relationship with brands I work with. I really believe in the messaging. I believe in what they're doing. So I talk about it in my real life, but then I do an ad for them outside my real life. Like, I am Kim Kardashian in a way, a real poor man's, like, what is my life and what is an ad? It all kind of blends into one. I'm going to start blow drying all the one piece of jewelry that I wear, which is my lovely wedding ring. I should see if it shrinks onto my finger, actually. I've lost weight since I got married. That's what marriage does. Stress. But I have also teamed up with the Style Sisters. This is totally separate from eBay because I loved the idea of clearing out my wardrobe so much. And then I saw them influenced me on Instagram. I'm sure that you follow them or you watch loads of their content. They are such great organizers. And I look at the wardrobes that they totally do over and I think, this is how I need to streamline my life. But like Celine, I have some special things that I'm really not ready to give away. And it's so difficult. This is why I need the Style Sisters, because part of me wants to give everything away and sell it on this eBay Live for charity. But part of me thinks, oh, well, there's such a story behind that gown. And shouldn't it be a time capsule for not just my children, but my grandchildren? I want to keep the outfits where I recorded Netflix specials, or I did my book launch. I mean, I'm giving away the dress from my book launch. I'm giving away some of the outfits from the Duchess, but a lot of those pieces are important. So how do you decide what to keep and what to give away? But I'll tell you where it's going. Some of it's going on the eBay Live and the rest of it is going in storage. If it's special and it's going to be labeled and put away for my children, then that's it. But I want my actual wardrobe to have 5 things in it max. And that's the only way to live. You look in your closet, you think, I have nothing to wear. And that's because I don't invest in like nice, sustainable, everyday pieces. And hopefully I can learn that through this eBay Live and through the Style Sisters. A few more odds and ends for you, and then we will go to the emails. All 5 of my besties, the Spice Girls, reunited for Victoria Beckham's 50th birthday over the weekend at Oswald's in London, and they even performed the iconic choreography to their hit, Stop Right Now, which David piped out to his Instagram followers. So if you, like me, are an elder millennial who felt a warm sensation tingle through your nether regions over the weekend, that would be why. I saw loads of pics of this. Some of my favorite photographers were there on the scene to capture. I think my favorite photo, I think Justin Palmer took it, and it's Victoria Beckham. Well, many photographers were at the door, but the one I saw was Justin Palmer's. I think the one they chose in the press was his as well, of David piggybacking Victoria out of her 50th birthday. And the things that that couple has been through, the fame and the press and the rumors and the this and the that and the living apart and the money and the America, to find yourself 50 years old and being piggybacked out of your party with your hunk of a husband and still looking very much in love, God bless them. I'm fiercely jealous. And one of the things still that makes me feel like I'm living in a simulation, you know, because sometimes I think I've died, because too many things have gone well for me. I just live with such joy and gratitude and happiness every day that I learn again and again from people that that's not normal, though it is what I recommend to everyone. Jimmy Carr, I don't even know what he was on. What show, what podcast he was on where he was giving away his life nuggets of wisdom that I thought were reserved just for me and his close friends. Just go to Jimmy Carr's Instagram and you can find these videos. It's the real Jimmy, like the soft, smart, wise, accomplished Jimmy who talks about gratitude. And he goes, you know, 50 years ago, you couldn't have a hot shower on demand. And the trouble with people is they get used to their lives too quickly. And everything becomes taken for granted and second nature. And it's like, if you just stand in that shower every morning and pause and go, oh my God, I'm living at the best time that it's ever been out of like 100 billion people ever to have lived, I am in the top tiny slice of privilege, then all your other, and that's easy for Jimmy to say because he's like in the top of everyone living now, but he makes a great point. It's like, just be grateful for the little things and the big things will come. But one of the things that really makes me feel like I am living in a simulation is that I know the Spice Girls and they know me. Like, I have their numbers. When I see them, they know my name. Like, the fact that Baby Spice can walk up to me and be like, hey, Catherine, if you had told 14-year-old, stop right now, Catherine, in her bedroom, like, oh yeah, you will know the Spice Girls one day. Like, Mel B will come to your comedy show more than once and have a drink with you in the dressing room before your gig and invite you around in Leeds. And you're going to know these women and text these women and be neighbors with these women. Like, what? I would never. I'm so glad no one showed up from the future and told me that, because I don't think I would ever have believed them and I wouldn't have worked so hard. I've been like, great, I'll just sit back and wait until then. I loved them and I love them now. And the one that I've never met and the one who I think doesn't know me is Victoria Beckham. I was not invited to the 50th birthday. I was not. Also, in odds and ends, Gen Z are abandoning dating apps in favor of old-fashioned methods of meeting people, aka IRL. I absolutely love that this is viewed as old-fashioned. Why do you think that is? I've never personally done the dating app thing ever, and I don't know what advice I could give Violet or, well, I think her generation, are they even Gen Z or are they younger? I did always hope that the ubiquity of social media and of smartphones would become passe, that they would just be saturated with that and all of a sudden wash their hands of it and go, do you know what? I am tired of being published and recorded and tracked and monitored and written down the details of every single interaction that I have. I'm going to take myself offline and go meet someone in a park. And in many ways, that makes me nervous because there's one good thing about being able to track them and check their Snapchat. You always know what they're doing, but that's not healthy. It's not healthy for their relationships, either romantic or platonic, and it's not healthy for their relationship with themselves. I think parents do have to learn to let them make mistakes, to discover their own leader, and not to boss them around, to be a tyrannical dictator all their life. And I think Bobby and Violet right now, I mean, he's always been a little bit more strict than I am. I think it is so in their interest just to have a good relationship with each other first. And I just want that to continue. I don't want too much discipline or like strictness surrounding Violet, but it is terrifying to think, oh yeah, that's what they're doing now. They're just going off and meeting in real life. It's not that she's old enough to be like just dating strangers, but I was never part of that culture. Like this business of, oh, I'm going to set you up on a blind date with so-and-so and you're going to turn up in a coffee shop and meet a stranger and speak to them. I never, ever was on any dating apps, not even the fancy dating apps for celebrities like Raya or Raya. There was one guy, one time, who slid into my DMs on Facebook. And we all know, the boomers my age, I know we're not boomers, but we all know that Facebook was the original dating app, or MSN Messenger or MySpace, that there were guys who would just use it, and guys who still do. They won't outwardly go on a dating app, but they use social media and they slide into DMs. And I think that's how kids use Snapchat a lot of the time. They're all mutual friends of friends and friends. They don't actually know each other. This one guy slid into my DMs and he said, oh, we're friends because I used to work at this production company and you met me from there. And at the time I was trying to date muggles. Like I was trying to date a real man who wasn't part of my industry. And he was a muggle at this point, even though he had worked in production. He's like, no, I'm a complete muggle and I want to take you for a drink. And I was like, maybe. I never really wanted to, but I was trying to lean into the culture. So we chatted and chatted, nothing untoward, just like kind of got to know each other. And then one day I agreed to meet him for coffee. I was like, okay, but I still didn't really want to. I was just playing the role of someone who was maybe starting to be okay with dating. And I brought my friend Tiff Stevenson with me, and I brought Violet with me. So it was absolutely not a date. And this guy was in like running gear, and I just thought, no, no. Because by now he's a spandex dad. And he bikes in packs of 16 with a helmet. And he was a wrong'un too, because he had a podcast. And he spoke about me on the podcast. And I listened to it because someone sent it to me. He used my full name and he really alluded to the fact that we'd had an actual relationship. Like I never kissed this man. I was never even alone in a room once with this man. Nothing ever happened with this man. And he let all the other guys on the podcast kind of laugh and insinuate that we had had some physical or romantic relationship. We did not. And I'd say his name to you now if I could fucking remember it, but I can't. Let's have some messages from our sponsors. And when we return, I will see what you've written to me, your dilemmas, your advice for other listeners. If you ever want to write me an email about anything, please don't include any personal details about your life. Please keep it as anonymous as you can. I don't even see your name. Joanne curates the emails. She sends me your letters. She takes out identifying features. She changes places. She changes ages and genders of children. She's doing all kinds of God's work out there. She takes your name out, but make sure that you don't accidentally play yourself. I've even had letters from husbands who are like, is this about me? Did my wife write it? Like multiple husbands writing in, thinking it's them and it isn't them. So don't, if you recognize yourself in these emails, just assume it isn't you. If you think you recognize yourself in these emails, there are probably five of you who think it's your wife who wrote me. It's not your wife. It's not you. Don't write me any details about your life. Tellingeverybodyeverything@gmail.com.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Ugh, as predicted, there are a ton of ramen detectives from last week's episode. I put a warning at the end to say, do not finish this episode. There's a disgusting question coming up. Just live your life. Pull over. And no one listened. You all listened to, instead, the horrid story about a woman who thought there might be semen in her ramen. And now I have to address this hideous situation again because so many people were motivated to write in. Catherine, I am pretty sure I know what happened with this woman's ramen. Sometimes Japanese restaurants put dried fish flakes on top of ramen as a garnish. These can melt into the food, so your listener might not have seen them. It does have a very particular smell and taste. It is called katsuobushi, or bonito flakes. It is, however, no bonito. I always request for this to be left out of any order. I really think this is what was in her food. It's not cool, seeing as how I presume she clarified that she wanted a vegan dish, but accidents happen. Let us pray that this is what was in her ramen and not semen. But again, this is why I felt like she should call the restaurant, because if I'm working front desk in the Japanese ramen restaurant and I'm getting a lot of calls from women who are like, listen here, I know the taste of cum. It's like, I'm going to say to them, we've had this call and it's these Japanese bonito flakes that apparently taste like cum. Look, I don't like to insert a lot of my own like sexual experience into this podcast, but I don't think that it has a distinctive or off-putting taste at all. I don't mean bonito flakes. I mean like semen. It doesn't bother me at all. At all. So I don't know what your partners are eating or drinking or not drinking, but I'd say get them hydrated because I struggled with this email. I don't really have a frame of reference. Uh-oh, an opposing view. It was deaf semen in the ramen. Catherine, I'm on a plane listening to the pod. I almost spewed my coffee listening to that last email. You got to intervene as public health and tell that listener to get an STI test panel done. I live in Newfoundland. Oh gosh, there was an incident I learned about in nursing school where there was a huge outbreak of herpes in Bay Roberts, which is formerly the AIDS capital of Canada, that public health could not even trace until they realized the only vector, which is a common site food exposure, that all the people were eating at the same restaurant, Kentucky Fried Chicken. If you haven't, listen, first of all, I don't want to get sued by KFC. I've had some nefarious emails about KFC before. It could not, it's like the Canadian, maybe KFC that's called something else. Please don't sue me, KFC. This is all alleged. If you haven't figured it out already, one of the employees who was infected with the herpes virus was masturbating and finishing into the food, specifically the coleslaw. Atlantic Canada is known for serving coleslaw with every meal. I know. And it has a distinctive tangy taste and smell with the white creamy color. I believe he ended up being charged with numerous counts of sexual assault, but he infected so many people with an incurable virus that personally, I believe he should have gotten the electric chair. While it's nice to know that Canada is as right wing as I remember it, alive and kicking with the capital punishment. Wow. All right, another email. I have no comment on your last email. None. I'm horrified, obviously. From an expert, these are the psychological reasons for smelling semen. Catherine, I love the podcast. When I was listening to the letter about the vegan ramen semen, I instantly was reminded of a patient. I am a psychiatric nurse. People can have olfactory hallucinations, and they are never pleasant. They complain of smelling rotten garbage, feces, and often semen. The smell is always present in the least likely scenario, and it doesn't matter how much you present them with reality, they will adamantly say, "No, I smell it." Also, my experience is that people who present with hallucinations involving semen have been sexually assaulted. Your listener stating that they're familiar with the smell of semen makes me wonder if that's the case. The best thing for this person to do is get someone else to smell the ramen. How likely is it that semen mixed into ramen will smell like hot, fresh semen? It would have had to be an entire soup made of semen. Did the entire kitchen ejaculate into the soup? And if so, what for? Thank you for producing content that tickles every inch of my brain. Looking forward to seeing you live. I don't know about you, babe. Okay, so people who haven't been sexually assaulted know the smell of semen. And I don't know about this. Like, I take your word for it, but I think your letter is the biggest leap ever. I think there's something in that ramen. I don't think this woman is likely to have a psychological issue that is making her to smell ramen at different times, like she's having a stroke or she's having hallucinations about this bad smell due to a sexual assault. I mean, maybe, but I think it's a reach. More likely than not, these flakes sort of have a weird semen-y taste to this woman. It is also possible that there's a weird guy who ejaculated just into the top of the ramen and she could smell it. And it was just like a putrid, it just took over the whole dish. You know what I mean? Like a basil leaf. But the only way this listener is going to get resolution is if she rings the restaurant. And she hasn't written us back this week. Please, ramen lady, please will you let us know? We need closure on this. I've had 100 emails about it. And Joanne has whittled them down, I think, very thoughtfully. Please let us know. All right, here's what else has been going on. Catherine, I'm a stay-at-home dad. Turned out, this is not from the stay-at-home dad. Is this my life? My stay-at-home dad turned out to be a wannabe trophy husband. Catherine, I just turned 28. I'm married with two small children. Okay, I'm not going to say their ages. My husband is 33. I fell for him when I was younger because he liked strong women. He mentioned that he wanted to be in the supportive role. He often said that he was going to be a stay-at-home dad. Then he became a dad. Because I am an empathetic and caring person, knowing he was going through a major life transition, I gave him time with these changes. I took on the burden. I continued with my arduous studies and training as I worked to gain my dentistry qualification. There are times when he would step into the father role, primary parent, or give me ample space to work, and I felt so grateful. I let him know how grateful I was. But every time he would step up, he just grew more and more resentful. When we had our second child, I didn't even take maternity leave. I fought policies at our clinic on human rights grounds to allow me to bring my child in while I completed my work so I could breastfeed. Afterwards, I attended an Arj Barker comedy show. No. I surpassed everyone's expectations and I achieved extremely high level of performance despite these circumstances. My husband told me he felt resentful that the birth of the second child seemed to be affecting him and his abilities more than me. Because I was succeeding, he withdrew so much of his support. I feel like he's become deeply dissatisfied with life. I think he has trouble differentiating the concepts of stay-at-home dad and trophy husband. Since the birth of our second child, he's gone on numerous boys' trips, weddings, etc. He has way more child-free time than I do. We have a nanny, even a private chef, and a lot of external support from my family. I feel so unloved. I want to be celebrated for being the capable person that I am. I want a divorce. I bring this up with him, and he's extremely resistant. He wants to stay together for the kids. What do I do? Oh, there's no such thing as stay together for the kids. I just hate that I think the parent who doesn't want the divorce and the parent who has been a little bit absent is always the one who then brings it up. Well, for the kids. Really? If you cared about our kids, you might have tackled your gambling addiction sooner. If you cared about our kids, you might not have been giving their college money to a sex worker. If you cared about our kids, you wouldn't maybe have been cheating on me with your secretary. If you cared about our, you know what I mean? So I think it's completely valid that a stay-at-home parent can have feelings of isolation and maybe even an identity crisis where they go, oh, this is a lot more than I thought it was, and I'm struggling. And I think it's good and healthy to articulate that. And this is why back in the 50s, you had Mommy's Little Helper, which was like Ambien or Vicodin or Valium from your doctor. And women developed opiate addictions because they lost their sense of self and they were home all day with these kids. And their husband was out gallivanting around. My problem is you are not that husband. You're not out gallivanting around. It's not you going on these boys' trips. And you're not expecting your husband to cook or to clean or to burden the entirety of raising these kids on his own. Like, you are very present and you have made it possible for him to have domestic help. So what is his fucking problem? I mean, he's weaker than you. And you have two choices. You can wake up every morning and you can look at the sun and you can go, dear God, thank you for making me so competent. Dear God, I'm so grateful that I'm not a little bitch like my husband and I am able to shoulder a lot more and still be successful in my work. Like, holy Christ, not a lot of people can do this. Thanks to you, God, I can. Now, I'm going to move forward without resentment and stay with my husband because I love him and I am accepting of him wholly as he is. And his 100% effort looks to me like a 4 out of 10, and that's okay. You can choose that. But if you are committed to justice and equality, you might find that difficult, or you might lean into saying, I can do it without resentment, but actually you can't. And resentment is a poison that will eat away at you and will destroy your quality of life. So I think if you want to give your marriage a go, work on moving forward without resentment. But if you can't, yeah, you do need to get a divorce. And you're going to have to pay for him forever, but you have to pay for him forever anyway. And the gift that you'll be giving yourself is waking up every morning and having the simplicity of, like, your nanny and your chef and your cleaner and your work, and you could spend time with your kids without having to also watch fucking Dune because he is like, I feel neglected as your husband. It's like, all right, well, I tried, but I don't actually have enough time to also indulge you as the trophy husband that you want to be, so you're out. And I don't think there's any shame in that. You know, if you're looking for permission from me, that's why you wrote me the letter, then there you go. There's your permission. But if you can ride it out, the children will be bigger soon. And I think a lot of wives do exactly that. They're like, okay, this happened. I'm better. I don't have resentment. I just know that I'm better than my husband. And now the kids are grown up and I can enjoy him again without resentment. So you choose. Is my husband cheating? Probably. Catherine, I'm so confused and hurt. I feel like you might have a fresh perspective. This is breaking me up inside. If you read this out, please keep me anonymous. Well, I mean, this is going to be the story of so many women. So I hope you have kept yourself anonymous, and I'm going to blur out any like thing that I think might be identifiable about you. My husband messages several women. Now, two that I know of are his friends. He texts them in a flirty vibe, but it's not explicit. They are both people he's slept with in the past. Another is his oldest friend, who I know he has a sexting, a sexting relationship with? I know that these women are not married, but these women know that he is married to me, and they also know that we have a six-month-old baby. He has a secure folder on his phone which contains intimate images and videos of lots of women, exes, and ex-flings. I know he still regularly uses these to get off. I'm going to read the rest of your email in this tone of voice because I am flabbergasted, ma'am. He also screenshots people's stories on Insta, particularly this one woman's selfies. It's not a celeb or a friend. It's just an artist who lives in our area. I know this, of course, because I've been on his phone. I haven't trusted him for a long time, but I love him. I somehow feel like as long as I know what he's doing, it's not pathetic and I'm not clueless. It's so dumb, I know. How can I say anything when I shouldn't even know about it in the first place? It's so hard to act like everything's normal. Most of the time I manage it, but then some days it gets on top of me. I'm so angry and resentful towards him and he doesn't even know why. I feel terrible. My self-esteem is at rock bottom. I will never be enough. I will never be enough for him. I live in his house. I don't have anything of my own. And even though I work part-time, I couldn't afford to move me or my child out. I also could not bear to share custody with him and to leave my little baby with him for X days a week. I don't know what this would do to my husband mentally. What? You don't know what this would do to your husband mentally? He's never been abusive or violent. Oh, never. Hank, never mind. You should have said that. He's never hit you. So what a fucking prince. My bad. My bad. You should have opened with that. He's actually very caring. He's actually not. He's a good dad and our child loves him. As far as I know, he hasn't cheated physically. If I didn't know what he was up to, he'd be the perfect husband. I don't know how to deal with it. So he's a psychopath. He's a psychopath. He's screenshotting pictures of women in your neighborhood and he is sexting women and writing flirty messages. And he has a folder of explicit trophies of women. Like, I think he might be a murderer. And you're like, but he's a great guy. Oh, super. So when they make a Netflix documentary about him, they'll have all those interviews with your neighbors lined up who are like, you know, he seemed like a really great dad and a caring guy. You could go missing, babe. I hate this guy. I understand completely the position that you're in with regards to custody of your daughter and not being able to support yourself. And this is why I think it's so important for other women listening who aren't in this relationship to be very, very careful with whom they have children. Like, don't have a baby with someone who might be like this, because once you have a baby with them and they are like this, you are trapped. You're not completely trapped. Of course, this woman can get a divorce, and I'm sure you do have friends you could stay with. And I also know that there would be public support for you. Not much, because our government's wild. But, you know, there are things, at the very least, interval homes. There are things that you could use temporarily while you get back on your feet. And you're the kind of person who, when and if you left this man, a weight would be lifted and you would thrive and get back on your feet and presumably be very successful. So all those options are available to you. You know that, but those options are really scary and you would have to leave your 6-month-old with this guy for so many days a week. And you don't want to do that. Like, you want to be with your daughter all the time, or son. Actually, it doesn't specify gender, or did you? I don't know. Maybe Joanne changed it anyway, but look, I think you need legal advice about the logistics of how you will financially extricate yourself. I think you need to start putting money away, and you might not leave overnight, but I think you need to mentally leave him overnight. You need to understand in your own head, you need to go rogue. Like, if this was a film and I was writing it, you would make a decision in your mind that, like, okay, I'm not going to confront him about any of this ever, ever. Like, honestly, when you leave him, he should be at the end of the driveway wondering why. Like, he should never know that you even found out. You just need to be like, I don't fancy you anymore. Boom. But right now, I think you need to, like, rob him somehow. Get money from him some kind of way. Have an OnlyFans. I have suggested to people that they get OnlyFans and then other people get mad about that. Because they're like, oh, what? Sex work? That's it? But it's like, you need to do whatever is available to you to make as much money as possible in the short term without compromising any of your values and keeping yourself safe and keeping your daughter safe, and really fraudulently rinse him as his wife as much as you can right now. Get legal advice if you can and see how much you will be entitled to, but often they can hide it and they can switch it and you don't want to lose custody anyway. I think build a little secret life by yourself, where you live in the home and you still get access to your daughter as much as you want. But hopefully you get to a mental place where you realize that this man is not loving you the way you deserve to be loved. And when you see what a joke he is, you can fall out of love with him yourself. I think whatever he's doing to you, I mean, you need a therapist. He's got your self-esteem like between his dirty little fingertips for you to think even for a minute that this behavior is acceptable. It isn't. This guy is a loser. This guy is a clown. And he is masquerading as a good husband and father, but he is a freak and he is cheating on you, regardless of if it's physical or not. Like, why does that detail matter to you? This man is acting in ways behind your back that are not honoring you as you deserve to be honored. And he's not a good dad because he is putting the mother of a small child through turmoil. And that is not being a good dad. You need to listen to the Slumflower Hour, Chidera Egaru, my favorite feminist, and you need to reach out to her explicitly. I'm going to do it for you. I'm going to go away this week. I'm going to speak to Chidera. I'm going to come back with a financial game plan for you and also a mental health program for you so that you can extricate your heart from this man's claws because he fucking sucks. That is all the time that we have for today because I'm going to be in a theater thing and it's a surprise, but it's a whodunit thing at Finsbury Park Theater. And I think by the time this podcast goes out, I'll be on stage anyway. So I gotta go. But thank you so much for listening, for sharing this podcast with your friends. Please watch Joe Wilkinson's Bargain Holidays tonight at 10 p.m. on Channel 4. I think we begin in Norfolk, which is the romance capital of the UK. We had an awesome time. You will see little Fenna Gracie in my womb. That's how long ago we filmed it. Please write me an email. Please write this woman an email because she needs all of our collective help. Telling everybody everything at gmail.com. Thank you. I'll see you next week.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.